Mr. Woo-hoo. Freeze.
That's a really big one.
That's okay.
Go for it, Richard.
About three months ago, we were here and presented this subject matter to you, and we indicated at the time that we were going to go back and finalize a policy, draft a couple letters for your consideration, and so we need some decisions. And Stephen advised me that basically before RCA started showing up on the agenda for to approve the policy and things like that, he wanted me to bring this back. So that's kind of what today is all about. So we're just going to review again the difference between a subdrain and an edge drain, how much of each we have in the system, what's our inventory, some of the challenges we have for maintenance, our inspection summer. We've done a lot of work in attempting to maintain the system this year. Since we last talked, we'll talk a little bit about that. The fact that we have sought proposals from outside vendors to do maintenance, and that will be one of the items that we'll be asking you to consider in hiring a contractor to assist us in maintaining the system. The SOP, which again is another formal action we'd ask you to take, and again, whether we want to send letters to the property owners, either the long version, which goes into a lot of explanation, or the shorter version, basically inviting them to our website, and then some budget and maintenance recommendations. So again, the definitions, this information was provided to you previously, but the subdrain was usually a perforated pipe, small diameter, 4, 6, or 8 inch, buried in the street. Typically, it was buried in the center of the street. It was buried deep underneath all the public utilities, the sanitary, the storm, and the water main to help drain the soils, the wet soils that occurred in some areas of the community. As part of that installation to drain the soils for the public utility installation, the home builders, the developers, actually the developer, who in many cases was the home builder, extended a service lateral from the main of the street back to the property line, and in many cases all the way to the home, eventually as in the same trench as the water service and the sanitary sewer service. In 2002, we stopped installing subdrains in the city and went instead to an edge drain, which is not located in the center of the street, but is located underneath the curbs, typically about 3 to 4 feet below the curb, and requires then that the water from the foundation drains and from the sump baskets is pumped actually into the edge drain. There should be very little opportunity for water to back up from an edge drain because that sump pump is going to have a backflow preventer on it. It's going to have a flapper valve that closes when you're not pumping water out, and so any water that's surcharging coming back in should not be able to enter the home. So again, just a couple examples here. In the upper right hand corner is a sub drain manhole. It's again typically 8 to 12 to 15 feet deep. And on the left, lower left, is basically a storm sewer catch basin with the subdrain, again, about 4 feet deep, just discharging into that. A lot easier to maintain. No confined space entry equipment required on the left. So a lot better design, and we've been doing that now for the past 14 years. So as far as the inventory is concerned, we have about 27 miles of deep subdrain, again, located in the center of the street. We have about 12 miles of edge drain located underneath the street. Edge drains are required as part of the city owner contract process in all circumstances unless the developer and their engineer make a case that the soils don't are of such a nature that they don't require an elaborate system of foundation drains and other things to pump into. So then that infrastructure is waived and we don't need to install it and maintain it. So overall, we have about 39 miles of subdrain and edge drain combined, almost 4,000 service lateral connections. Again, they're based on estimated from the construction plans. Construction plans will show a service lateral going back to the property line. In many cases, though, there is not documentation as to whether that was extended from the property line back into the building. So, again, I didn't bring any show and tell with me today, but we, at the last meeting, had examples of the flowstone on the right that are basically mineralized formations or deposits that have built up in the deep, particularly the deep subdrain systems over the past 25 to 30 years. It's a labor intensive to get this stuff out. Again, it literally becomes rock. It's hard as rock. We've been able, in so many cases, to cut it out, and in some cases, such as the picture that was on the cover of the handout, the cover page, this was the excavation that occurred last year up in the North Park neighborhood. So in some cases, we have to go in and actually open up the street and go down into the line and cut the line out and put a new pipe in. So again, it's a mineral. The water is heavy in minerals. The hard water we have, we all know that. But these deposits, this mineralization causes its deposit. It develops fast. It's under low oxygen conditions in the pipe. Again, the examples that we brought, and you can see on the left there a little bit some of the stratification. Looks again like the rocks you used to study in geology class. So here's the kind of the summary. Here's the numbers. There's about 429 mapped subdrain manholes. We were only able to find 382 of them. Several of them are that 29. There's 29 in bad or poor condition that requires some immediate follow-up and maintenance. There's 38 was in fair condition, and the good news is 350 were in good condition and need no action at this time. We could not locate 47 of them, possibly due to mapping errors. Some may be buried, but we had two cross connections that were identified. What that means is the sanitary was hooked to the subdrain, and the subdrain was hooked to the sanitary. And it's been that way for several years in those that we did find. So that was a good catch. When the plumbers made the connections, they just connected to the wrong pipe inside the house. We've had one call from a property owner regarding the subdrain issue with the search, but we get very few calls. And we had one subdrain main, the deep ones, that was blocked by tree roots. Generally, that's not the problem. Tree roots are more of a problem in the edge drains. So as far as an inspection, maintenance was performed at sites where problems have been found. The inspection results show some surprises, such as the cross connection, other utility conflicts. We found in one case where a gas main was installed right through a subdrain. Goal for routine maintenance is to get the pipes clean of all material deposits and obstructions. A majority of the drainage calls that we get are for houses that are not in areas where there are subdrains and edge drains. Typically, we don't get calls there because basically the water's infiltrating, it's running down the edge of the foundation, it's getting in the foundation drain and going down ultimately into the subdrain. And properly functioning subdrain and edge drain is obviously very important to the property owners. So we actually have gone out and solicited proposals. We sent to four contractors back in March. We received proposals. We're asking basically your consideration of a five-year contract. What we received from them was hourly rates for their rental of their equipment and their crew. And we would propose to contract and include in the budget about $200,000 a year of work for each of the next 5 years to do this. Received bids from two local contractors, Roto-Rooter. Rutgers Plumbing Roto-Rooter had the best unit prices, and we're suggesting that the stormwater utility fund the cost of this maintenance over the course of the next 5 years. So the standard operating procedures, I sent that out to you yesterday. Again, as I indicated, I didn't expect you to read it, and we don't need to discuss it in great detail today, but it is something that we'll want to have you consider for adoption on the 19th as part of your regular council meeting and the RCA that will be prepared there. It talks about inspection procedures for the manholes and the pipes, the frequency of cleaning, the mapping of the system. The documentation is again important. We're going to treat this just as the same as we do with our inspection protocols for the sanitary sewer. So we're going to use the same type of inventory management and documentations systems that we're using, already using. We had talked about sending letters to the property owners. I know a constituent of Nick's is basically, there's a point he raised with Nick, and Nick has forwarded to us that people should be made aware of the fact that they may be subject to that. This letter would notify the property owner that it could be connected. They could be connected, and there's a potential of damage to their property if a backup were to occur. The letter will leave the decision up to the property owner. Again, it's a private connection. The service lateral for the subdrain is the same as their water service and sewer service. It's private all the way out to the public main in the street. And the only way for the property owner to probably to verify if they're connected or not is to have a licensed plumber do an inspection. The downside of the letter is that you're going to raise concerns for people who don't have any, because they may not be connected. They may not have ever experienced any problems with their system, and potentially going to cause, again, confusion and concern, and maybe in some cases a little bit of panic for people to have a plumber come in and check something out that maybe is not a problem or hasn't been a demonstrated problem for themselves. So, again, as I've been indicating as I've gone through this, next steps, we'd like you to approve a 5-year maintenance contract at the September 19th meeting with Rochester Plumbing and Roto-Rooter Service to do maintenance at an annual budgeted amount of about $200,000 a year. Approve the subdrain standard operating procedures at the next council meeting on the 19th. Approve a release, or to decide whether to send a release letter or mailing to property owners. And then I think one of the things, if you want to do that, should it be the long form or the short form, we will continue to provide information on our city website. And any other direction that you'd like to give us, we'd welcome. That's the essence of my presentation today, just kind of an update of what we talked about, providing you a little bit more information on what our inspections and maintenance activities have been for the year so far.
Okay. One quick observation as I was reading through your materials. One, I firmly believe we should inform the public. I mean, to have the information and not let them know just because it might be confusing would be inappropriate. One thing I might suggest as we communicate, and we should use whatever methods we have, the letter, website, our Facebook page that we have for the city, etc. One document I would suggest creating is like an FAQ type document that puts it in a bit more, you know, piecemeal and layperson's term that might address some of the things that you talk about.
So maybe the short form of the letter with an FAQ attached.
Right. I'm still in support of one of the letters, but an FAQ might answer questions like, how do I know if this affects me, or what should I do, who should I call, you know, some of those kinds of high level things. So that's just my initial observation. Mr. Campion?
I completely agree, and I think one of the things I was going to add is kind of, I mean, when I get something in the mail, I like to know exactly what the steps should be, that as a property owner, you know, what's our mitigation plan. And it seems like having a document that says step one is to determine whether or not you're connected to the system, and here's the ways that we would suggest you can do that. One of the things that I like about the FAQ in particular is the ability to answer the question, I've never had water in my basement, so I must not be connected. And that is just patently false. What can be happening is your water can be flowing downhill to a neighbor right now, and next thing you know, when that neighbor gets disconnected, you could find yourself the next most likely path for this. So I think that there's some opportunity there to address some of these kind of misconceptions about just because you're dry right now doesn't mean you're not necessarily going to experience something down the road, especially as our kind of water events or rain events and other things change.
And I think that, and Nick is speaking from experience on this, yeah, in particular circumstance in North Park, was the fact that if that gentleman would have disconnected from the system, the next guy up the street would have gotten all the water that the guy downstream was getting. So in some respects, he did a great service to his neighbors,
right,
by not disconnecting. And I mean, he's pumping outside now and getting rid of it way, but I mean, that's an example of the neighbors never had any problem, and soon as somebody else makes a change in their connections, the guy particularly below you elevation-wise, you could then be the next lowest house.
Okay, yeah. One suggestion I might have, if you're trying to come up with an FAQ and you're trying to anticipate laypersons or homeowners' questions, we might ask for the advice of maybe like an Our Neighbors group or someone like that to say, here's this presentation and we want to put together this document. What kinds of questions would you envision neighborhoods would pose? And then we can answer those. It might be a way to, you know, we might be a little bit, or at least you are, probably too close to it to maybe anticipate some of those questions. Maybe we could leverage a group like Our Neighbors. Just a thought. Mr. Bilbeck.
And I think, too, going back to maybe next neighbor who's had this experience, finding out what are things that he wish he would have known as before this process might be a good way to get some good FAQs.
I'll tell you, I mean, it's kind of, it's a heartbreaking story, honestly, kind of what has gone on with that particular individual's property. And I know that kind of, we had water in our basement, we had to fight it, ours wasn't, at least I don't think, is sub-drain related, but it's just a frustrating problem to keep fighting. And to now find out that there's this system that's been, they've been, unfortunately, the victim of a system that was supposed to be helping them. I think there's that real, I think it's really important to get that out there that you're saying, and I don't think anyone's advocating otherwise. I think getting the information in their hands at least starts spurring conversation about what we need to do to fix it.
Anyone else? Mr. Ruskin.
Richard, I'm with the group here on the process, but kind of wondering about logistics. If you send 4,000 of these out at one time, and it spurs a lot of questions. Is that the idea, is to do it all at once, or are you going to phase it out, or what would be your plan to get the information out?
Well, I prefer to do it by neighborhood, probably, and phase it in over time, because I'll get a letter, and my neighbor gets a letter, and we're meeting at the
mailbox,
you know, and so I prefer to do it kind of over probably a period of about a month.
Okay.
In different neighborhoods at a time.
And would
maybe
we be
a couple neighborhoods a week, something like that?
Would we be made a bit?
Sure, we can.
Kind of let us know what neighborhoods you'd be doing, and then also, because that was my question: is if you send 4,000 out at once, do we have enough staff to handle? It could be a surge of calls and questions, and you know that, so we don't get people frustrated that we got the letter and now nobody can help them. I kind of like the idea of the questions, but I also like to maybe do like a little flowchart thing that says if you have this, go to B. If you have, you know, if you find out this, now you're free, you're good. But, you know, kind of make it clear and simple for people, because a lot of this stuff is a little more complicated than the average person understands.
Yeah, anything we can do to facilitate communication. Mr. Bilbeck.
So, Richard, do we have some parts of the city that are having more issues with this than others?
In the last 2 years, we've had primarily one neighborhood that's had issues. And as I indicated, we get very few calls on this issue, so it's not been problematic, but it seems to come in waves, if you will, about every 5 or 6 years. And a different, I mean, it was probably 10 years ago we had some issues out in Apple Ridge. Now it's North Park, and I think it's just, again, the buildup of the mineralization of the pipes over time has got to the point that the flow has been restricted.
Remind me again how you would anticipate funding the maintenance program. I think you said about $200,000 a year.
In the stormwater utility budget, since it is connected, it is stormwater, it's rainwater, eventually gets into the system, it's connected to the storm sewer system. As far as the conveyance system, once it enters the sub-drain system,
okay.
I don't have a better source for you. Property taxes would be the other, I assume that's certainly not. Preferred alternative is that.
I like stormwater.
Okay.
Mr. Campion.
There's a stormwater charge on the RPU bill, correct?
Yes.
So one of the, I have this delicate balance about this particular issue, because at a fundamental level, think that this is kind of a neighborhood level public, but it's not citywide public. I don't know that there's a citywide benefit. Would there be some, I'm just going to throw this out there for, would it be something, it looks like it's about $50 a year if we charge it to all the 4,000 homes that have been indicated here. Is that something we could look at and say, you know, this is a private, this is public maintenance of what is potentially a private benefit? Is that a bigger challenge than I'd like to imagine in my head?
I think it's much bigger than I'd like to challenge myself. Maybe
a challenge that you have to get the approval of all of them. None of this other scenario you wouldn't have to get individual approvals.
Well, you'd have to figure out who's connected.
Okay.
That's probably the biggest challenge.
Well, we don't have to figure it out. Can't we say, prove to us you're not connected and we'll remove the fee?
Again, now the property owner's just incurred an $80 an hour plumber coming, or $90 an hour plumber coming to his house to make that determination.
To save $50.
Well, $50 a year. And I mean, at this point, the real problem I see is that this is in perpetuity from what I see. Like, these systems. What I'm really concerned about happening is we send the letter this year, and I know houses in Northwest Rochester turn over about every 6 years. We seem to see, on average, it seems like we're turning people over. So then in 6 years, the mental knowledge that this is a problem is gone. We've invested $1 million in it, and where does that leave us? A lot of people hopefully have disconnected, but I'm not sure.
I'd like to suggest that we basically get through the system once, get it cleaned out, and then see how frequently inexpensive it is to maintain it.
Okay.
Then, because there's been a long period of time when it hasn't been, it's been visually inspected, but not cameras run up every single pipe. So I think potentially that cost could go down once we get through the whole system, and it's probably going to take us 5 years to get through the whole system.
And there's no way for us to do something where we obligate the homeowner to pass some information on to at sales. There's nothing like that.
Well, again, we've thought about the at the time of sale approach when it came to upgrading the sanitary sewer service lateral to show that it wasn't subject to infiltration and inflow. But again, we introduced that to the council, and that didn't go anywhere either. So those are things I think we could consider, but I would suggest right now we try to get through the system first, have a better feel for what the inventory is. Councilman Hickey and I were talking just before most of the rest of you got here about, well, what about just backflow preventers on all these pipes? And I think that we probably should research that. It probably should be part of our FAQs. What would it cost to put a backflow preventer on a 4-inch subdrain? I think it's going to be pretty expensive. But again, that may be people's preferred choice.
Yeah.
And again, I just assume we kind of go out there a couple of years and see what our real experience is. This is our estimate right now.
And we're making people aware, and I think that was my overarching objective with this, is now that we have a process, we have a system in place, there's little people can claim that they weren't aware that this could be a potential problem.
I mean, the council, you know, obviously could consider basically a sunset provision that basically said the city's only going to maintain the system for another 5 years or 10 years, so please make arrangements for mitigating this on your own property. And you know, we could, in essence, give them a notice that we're not going to be maintaining the public system any longer, and we're going to abandon it in 5 or 10 years.
Assuming by mitigate, it means I'll have to disconnect.
They'll have to do something, yes, because we won't be maintaining the system.
Right. One other thing I might say is, can we budget into this like year three, you know, at $200,000? I don't know quite how this works if you already have the request, but one thing I might want to consider budgeting is a reminder, like a little postcard size thing that says, just a reminder, if you haven't addressed this, you know, we've notified you once that this is an issue, and do that like 3 years down the road. Because I think, again, I just don't see, I've already gotten complaints because we've sent a letter once and people say, I never got it. Well, you know, you may have moved, the person who got it may have moved, you know, I think we're going to have to probably budget for some ongoing communication challenge with this particular issue, because I would like to see everyone disconnected, but I know that that's cost prohibitive.
Another way of communicating too, we could send this out as an insert in the RPU mailings, things like that. I mean, if we can use some sort of official communication, if I just get a postcard in the mail, I might ignore that, but I open my bills.
We don't have the ability to do that.
Oh, why?
We don't have that ability to do that.
RPU said that?
RPU's
Is it a logistical thing or a legal thing or what?
It's a logistical thing.
Don't we own that?
Well, you don't have the ability to send out to just those people with the subdrain, you're saying, right?
Oh.
No. Or go to everybody.
Who's we?
We the city.
Yeah. Well, I think Richard has been involved in discussions with RP on billing costs that which we think are excessive for some.
We've tried to do inserts before, and it just logistically doesn't work.
But then when, under the RPU system, you'd hit everybody, and you probably don't want to notify everybody.
Well, yeah.
I mean, in the whole community.
Mr. Ruska.
I guess two things. I'd be curious to Terry's thought if we tried to tell people that we are no longer going to maintain the system and disconnect them in a few, you know, sunset it, as you say. I wonder if there'd be people that come back and say, I never got the notice, I didn't know, it wasn't clear to me. I'd be concerned that somehow, if they did have damages down the road, would come back to us on that one. So
I mean, you can do it by, you know, certified mail, registered letter, you know, you can assure. We can do that. It costs more.
Okay.
It's
that's what I'm saying. Let me make sure if we do that, it's tight, not just something thrown out in a postcard. But the other thought is there a chance that there could be unintended consequences on the fact of us doing this maintenance program and finding things out there that are more than we expected and that are going to cost more to deal with as we drill down, as you want to say, to find more things that we go, oh, man, this is going to take us more money to fix this.
Yes, and that's why I kind of want to reserve some judgment here on your behalf or for your behalf, is that you can make some decisions based on what we find in the first couple of years or going through some of these systems.
On that line, I totally agree. If you find something you're not expecting, I would much rather have a neighborhood meeting and bring the neighborhood together and say, listen, we can't afford to maintain the system if a tree's fallen into the middle of your subdrain. We're going to have to figure out, and frankly, if we come to the council making it, you know, helping to make it affordable for people to disconnect at that point, I think we have to really be pragmatic about this. This is a millstone we're going to be carrying for a long time. Hopefully not a lodestone, but.
So I mentioned in the cover letter and the email yesterday that about the discretionary immunity, and I just wanted you, I think you're all aware of that, and I mentioned to Terry today that I was going to bring it up, that adopting this policy is, I think, really important. So whether it's in a form that's been written, you want it rewritten in a different format or whatever, and probably let Terry look at it, at least from the perspective of kind of proves it has to form, if you will. I think it's important that you adopt a policy of some form as it relates to your discretionary immunity.
Just a comment. I do like the short form. I wish it were one page. And the frequently asked questions I noticed on the website, I was looking, I think it might have been on Public Works, but there are several questions like, how do I do this? It's really simple questions, and they were highlighted so that you could click on it and go directly to that. And we have this TV service that you could announce or let the public know. I don't think you could separated into specific neighborhoods, but that certainly is another avenue. And of course, I like the letter. I'm glad you got the consultant. I think it's a good letter. I think it's the letter that's needed to go out, but I think it just needs to be a little bit shorter. And
one thing we could do, I've given this a lot of thought, is that we could produce a little bit of a video, you know, working with Rochester Plumbing, and basically this is the steps you need to follow. Just, you know, get a house and go through the process of the inspection and everything. Post it to our website and give people a link in the letter. Basically says this is, you know, it's probably a lot easier to understand than reading a bunch of words. So it's something else we could do.
And I think that was where Ed was going. Anyway, we can appeal to whatever works best for people, a visual diagram, a video, you know, a letter, whatever. That's, I think we should explore all of those options just so that we get the word out.
I hate to see 60,000 households all worried about something that only, you know, impacts a few of them. And that way, like, I'm thinking if there's just the ability for them to get an understanding and say, oh, that's not me, it would certainly help us to get through this.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the policy will be much clearer. And additionally, I guess I would ask, I think you at one point had a map up that showed the neighborhoods we're talking about.
Right.
We can post that on the website alongside of all this information, because I think, you know, even if they get a rough estimate of why is my, maybe we have a why are you having drainage problems page and have that on it to say you may be connected. Because I try and think of things people are going to put in Google as soon as they go and have a basement flood, and that could be hopefully a
so hit. Do we have a list of all the possibly affected addresses, properties?
We have a map of all the affected areas. We don't have a master list of addresses yet, but we know where the subdrains were installed, so we can basically use our ARC map to come up with a mailing list.
I mean, I'm just wondering if that's one of the first steps I would do as a homeowner. Give me a reference point, a map or something, to tell me if I'm even remotely in the area. I might be out of it totally, and, you know, problem solved for me.
I think we probably can work with the post bullets and probably get a map in the paper, possibly.
I mean, this is a compelling topic. I know he's working on his article right now.
It's going to be difficult because we probably aren't going to be able to show the lines with maybe more of an area that
right.
would be colored. So I think we probably could come up with a map that, if they're interested, they could possibly could publish.
Especially if we link them to our website where we have a higher definition.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else then? We'll take this up on the 19th, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And there's been a couple of you commented about the letter, the short form. So the short form of the letter and FAQs, is that the direction you want to go?
I think so.
Okay.
Because the letter just introduces the topic, and then I'm going to, personally, I would gravitate more toward the FAQ to, you know, get some of my specific questions answered.
All right.
And then give me a contact.
Thank
okay.
And have it on the website so you can click on the FAQs.
All right, thank you. We will move on to our final topic for this afternoon, and I will turn it over to Mr. Adkins to set it up.
This is a closed meeting of the City Council to receive a communication from and to have a discussion with the City Attorney regarding the litigation strategy and possible appeal of a Court of Appeals order in City of Rochester versus Franklin P. Cacciotti and SJC Properties LLC, Olmsted County District Court, file number 55 CV157888, involving Cacciotti's demand for arbitration of a dispute involving excess MnDOT right-of-way delivered to the city. Closed meeting will occur pursuant to MnStat section 13D05, subdivision 3B.